I once had a discussion with some guy who I don't really know, but I've seen some things he's done. He's done good work in what he did. I believe his name is Leiter. And we were like discussing what's the hardest sefer in Tanakh, the hardest Hebrew word in Tanakh. So I'm sure I don't quite remember. I would say it's like a toss up between Kohelis and Iyov.
Not Shir Hashem.
Shir Hashem's not hard at all. Shir Hashem, Mamash, not hard at all. I've said many more than one time. I haven't done it in a long time. It's not yet Shir Hashem season. Pesach Kav is Shir Hashem season. If you get a group together, I tried to last year, it was unsuccessful. If you get a group together, I'll say, I would prefer to have at least three, if not four or five sessions, and we could go through the whole Shir Hashem. I could do it at supersonic speed, 45 minutes, an hour, let's say, if I had to. Shir Hashem is perfect, it's not a problem at all. I mean, if you work with Rashi. But, okay, whatever. So I said it's either Kohelis or Iyov, a very hard Hebrew word, Tanakh. And he proposed, interestingly, maybe I said Divrei Yom also. Divrei Yom is a very hard Hebrew. And I mean, the problem with Divrei Yom is there's no Rashi. But let's not worry about that right now. His counter proposal was that he thought Ezra Nechem was the hardest because there's absolutely nothing on it. I mean, even less than Divrei Yom. He tried saying Shir when Ezra Nehemiah, and it was, a lot of good questions without much material to work with. So, but I say Kahal is a very hard Hebrew. It's hard. Now, what makes Kahal hard is Kahal is clearly developing, it's developing and it's concentrating on one basic idea, and that basic idea is what should man be doing in this world. That's the topic of the Chibur, and we go, and then that's what it's trying to do. And the problem is, I don't think I told this to you, I was once speaking to Tzvi Teshen about it. Tzvi Teshen knows Shas B'Yud, and I'm not exaggerating. If you guys show up to the Rishim at the right time, you have time to wait to speak to him. Worth an experience worth doing because he's holding the sugya that you're holding it better than you are. I'm sure of it. Anyway, Bekitzer. So I said to him, I was talking about Kahalas. He said, Kahalas, well, it's not so difficult. Shalom Alexander tried everything out, and nothing was good, and the only thing that's important is your Shabbat. I said, okay, that's very good. So you have Perek Aleph Beis, maybe up to Kol Yisus Mod, chop the rest out, go to the next Perek and a half, and the whole thing would be great. Then I would agree with you. I mean, but Gadol, as they say, in the biggest picture, he's sort of right. But the problem is how do we justify all the movement in the Megillah? The Megillah has a lot of movement in it. Unlike Shir Shirim, there are two different Maseres, two different traditions to where you split the sefer. You're familiar with Parshas Pesukos and Stumos? You know what that means? Okay. There's the Ashkenazi version in Shir Shirim, which doesn't have much. And then there's the Sephardi Temani version, which has a lot. I personally am convinced that Rashi had the Sephardi Temani version, simply because of the fact that the way Rashi divided the sefer up, works so conceptually well with the Sephardi Temani Parsha system that I find it basically impossible to say he didn't have it. I mean, you can't. I don't have any proof. The Radak, maybe twice in the entire Tanakh that I'm aware of right now, only twice in the entire Tanakh explicitly refers to Parsha breaks. So it's something that we show that didn't explicitly. It's like assumptive, and because it's assumptive, it's sort of like the text of the Siddur. The text of the Siddur is an assumptive text that Mishnah refers to, assuming you know what it is. Like, the Mishnah towards the end of Psalm, Va'achaf Olam Birkas Hashir. What's Birkas Hashir? nishmas. Okay, very good. But it's assumed that you understand what that is. It's an assumptive text in a similar fashion. The Rishonim just don't mention parshias because obviously you have parshias. The facts are that the non-Jewish chiluk distinction of chapter systems invented towards the end of the Rishonim period, and logic sort of says that no one was aware of it. I mean, it's cute, sort of, whatever. In Nevi'im Rishonim, and Chumash in Nevi'im Rishonim, it's not that bad and not that off. In Nevi'im Achronim and Ksuvim, it gets like in Kehelis. And, you know, the guy who did it, his name was Jerome, and he reverts to what I call the Goldilocks rule. You know what Goldilocks said? That's right. Not too big, not too little, just right. So that's more or less his. That's more or less what he does. In you know, places where he gets lost, the chapter shouldn't be too big, shouldn't be too little. It should sound like it's starting with something, you know, exciting. But okay, what do you want? You know, it's a hard regula. I don't you know, like blame Jerome that much for not understanding. Well, like I keep empathize to an extent. Okay, that gets us on our next topic. This is like, I don't think we're going to talk much, maybe a little bit. If you guys have some specific questions, but not, we're going to talk more in broad terms today, most likely. I said last year, I said in Shraga, I said 6 months of Shiro, maybe 7 months. 7 months of Shiro, and we got through the fifth paragraph. And I'm hoping to be Mechanimes. And, you know, because most of the group of Shana Beck guys, so they all left. So I'm hoping to be Mechanimes because I saw how much I was able to. How much more is able to do with it, so I hope to have Mason go on and basically get to the end of this and go on, or get to a reasonable place where whatever. Okay, yeah. Maybe I'll tell you a story about that later. Okay. Now there's a different idea which I've developed in the last number of years, and now finally in one, you know, clear fashion. There's a difference between what I call live examination versus autopsy. There's a difference between what's called a live examination versus an autopsy. An autopsy is that you assume the person's dead and you try to interpolate out what was happening. Of course, the longer a person's dead, the harder the autopsy is. You find that much less. Live examination assumes that there's not a system, the person's alive and talking, and you just know a lot more about it. And that's sort of a anticipation. There's another, I think, conceptually related issue, which is what I call projection. The difference between the world today and the world 20 years ago, and the world 30 years ago, so different, you guys can't, you don't imagine. I'll tell you a story, just as we say, but did you have a Uvda? You know where I grew up?
Abba?
Yeah. My father worked for NASA for almost 25 years. I grew up in what is termed the great state of Alabama. I went to public school until 8th grade. Which, that's just to get you to the next story. I was in 7th grade public school. They're very, you know, like very middle class. Not, you know, most people, your standard person's father, half the class's parents were working NASA-oriented people. So it was like, no, whatever, very, you know, clean-cut middle class place. So in middle school there, and believe it or not, this is the mid-70s, mid-late 70s, they did not have air conditioning. If you think it's hot, and I'm not sure, or you're shy, you just go to Alabama, man. It's 95 degrees with 95% humidity for May 1st. I grew up, I didn't understand why it's so, they say summer starts June 22nd. As far as I'm concerned, it starts May 1st. May 1st was 85, 90 degrees already. And 95% humidity, and that was expected through September 1st straight. If you're lucky, it rained a little, cool things down. Anyway, kids are dead venting between the classrooms to allow some cross circulation. And they took it down. They're finally putting in air conditioning, they took it down. So the kids were big kids, and they were kind of paper airplanes, and shooting spitballs. materials and all sorts of things between classes that the vice principal didn't like it. He held it with bad decorum. And the vice principal in southern public schools in this era were large 6'2", 6'4 people, rumored to have formerly been part of the Marine Corps. Whether that part was true, we don't know, but that was the rumors. And he made what we call a Xerushaw. He said a temporary expedient. The school rules were one lick for cussing. We know what cussing means.
Did they actually call it the cussing?
That's what they call it then, is cussing. One lick for cussing, and three licks for fighting. You didn't know, there was no cursing or fighting going on. Still, it wasn't worth it. Curse word was not worth one lick. One lick was with a paddle about this big. Okay. Vice principal decides things are out of hand, and makes this temporary Zera. Anyone caught throwing something from one class to another gets five licks. Okay. The announcement goes out. I don't think it was on the intercom. I think it was via the grapevine. Catches two kids, pulls them in the hall. Usually you brought to the office. Brought them into the hall. Boom, boom, five licks. Put the thing down in one afternoon. So, I'm telling you this story not just to entertain you, but to show you. I told this once to someone from, you know, the northeastern seaboard area, 10 to 15 years older than me. And he looks at me and says, how old are you? When were you born? What? Which decade were you born in? I told him, I said, I can't believe it. That's unbelievable. So, it's just... Yeah, I want you to understand. I'm telling you that story to show you the differences that existed. You know, we live when we live, and there's nothing wrong with when we live. And that is brought in Kohel's record for parent Zion.
Doesn't he say that someone who says that our times aren't as good as past?
Okay, he's not...
That's he's not talking specifically.
Yeah, he's not talking about what I'm talking about, but yeah, he's right. He's saying don't go and think that the early generations who had what they had, that was the ultimate of perfection. Okay, whatever. It's really not that. It's really something else. But yeah, it's a mistake to think that. But the point for our understanding, say for Kahelis, like Ilse Kahelis, is we have to be careful. I mean, we have to be careful not to project our cultural norm onto the McGill's gals.
Not to project.
That's very, you know, it's very, what's the right word, sort of psychologically revealing about you if you do it. And of course, there's a challenge. I'm 100%, there's a massive challenge we have. So I'm telling you, we can't project because things are so different today. So we mustn't project onto Kahelis. Okay, very good. So what do we do? You know, to a certain extent, we are formed by where and who we are. And that's a different, you know, whatever. That's, you know, as I tell people, you know, sometimes I'll say something overly blunt, and I'll say, look, the bottom line, part of me did grow up in the very deep south. And, you know, people who grew up in the deep south are very blunt people. And I'll tell you their mind, whether you like it or not. Clearly, etc., you know, without any hesitation. So, yeah, yes, yeah, no, we have to do our best to like, attempt to overcome that. But you know, these two ideas together are why I'm trying to work with Rashi out. You know, just one more quick little story. About 15 years ago, I think I told this story, 15 years ago or so. Real shame, just on shots, 20 years ago. You can't write people's names now. And after a period of about seven years or so, I used to have, you know, Jeff Seidel, Mayor Schuster. Mayor Schuster's no longer operating, unfortunately. They scrape people off the walls, it could be said. And send them to you for Shabbos.
What is this?
There was a guy who was Mayor Schuster. He's still alive, but he's not that functional. I don't know if that's how he doesn't do it anymore, but there's a different guy named Jeff Seidel who does do it. They go over to the tourists at the hotel and say, they have like a whole system how to figure out. They prefer to deal obviously with Jews, but you want Shabbos meal? Go to someone's house for a Shabbos meal. So that's called people scrimp straight off the wall. So about 15 years ago, 15 to 20 years ago. It feels about the right time. I had a guy over. He was a professor of Judaic studies.
Was that
fun? It was a lot of fun. As he was a professor of Judaic studies, we had a great time together. In some university in northern Quebec.
They have universities there?
Apparently they do. I don't know how northern, but it's not Montreal. It's north of Montreal. He learned French in Paris, and this was very fascinating. He told me that the peasants, the locals in the town he was in, were embarrassed, even though he clearly had an American English speaker's accent. I don't think he was from Montreal. I don't remember which country he was from. I don't remember. He clearly had an English speaker's accent, but he spoke perfect Parisian French. And Parisian French is much more polished than Canadian French. Much more polished, you know. It's like sort of whatever. So he's told me that these Quebec-y peasants were embarrassed to speak to him in French because his French was better than theirs, and they would speak to him in English, in broken English, which for a Frenchman is like Yerra and Valiavo practically. Anyway, so I had a great time with this guy. Unfortunately, because I did have cards, because I can't take your information but take mine, but he never got back to me. He was here for a sabbatical. He was pretty, considering where he came from, etc., he was pretty religious. His program actually was to teach people how to learn Gemara. That was his program. That was the ideal. In other words, the way he set up his program in this university, he felt that the ultimate Jewish experience is learning Daf Gemara.
That's amazing to come from that sort of religious guy.
It sort of is, but okay, it's, you know what, I give him credit for accurate observation of Jewish scene, because it's sort of right. That is the core. If you want to know the core of Judaism is about, it's about Darshan Malkah. But anyway, in our conversations, I was choosing about Tanakh, etc. with him. So one of his expertises is some type of analysis of early Christianity versus contemporary Christianity. And he was very up in arms about this, that they projected, in other words, early Christianity was probably much closer to Judaism than the present one is. And he felt they were gross projections on early Christianity based on outside things. He knew I was running traditionally, so that's fine, because that is definitely a direct continuum of how Torah was given and how Torah is done. And when you take an outside system and you project, then you come out with a funny product. So that was I don't know what the guy's name was. I know he's unfortunate. I don't totally lost touch with him. But that's why I'm very much a traditionalist. I've spent for various reasons a couple of years studying Hasidus. I'm not like naturally a Hasidus type person, but I'm not. I'm not. If you want to meet some real Misnagdim, real proper Misnagdim, I can introduce you to them. I know people who are proper Misnagdim. And your Yeshiva friend, who is the biggest insult you can give somebody, is calling him a Hasidish guy. That's like the worst insult. He's just a Hasidish guy. So amongst other things I've looked at was, what academia has to say about Hasidus. And I'd be very blunt that I'm extremely, I'm like overwhelmingly under-impressed, because the problem is they do just push it through autopsy. They think Hasidus is kilo. They view it as a dead body. They don't know any real Hasidim, any people who are in the inn, and they insist on separating, Hasidic tradition. Hasidus is not that old. You understand? I'm talking about a 300-year-old movement, not even a 300-year-old movement. They insist on separating Hasidic tradition with what we know. And they come out with all sorts of, it's absolutely accepted across the boards that Pshiska Hasidus, Pshiska Hasidus is whatever. Pshiska Hasidus rejects learning Zohar. Why did they say that? Because all the quotes from Rabbunim of Pshiska in the Yid there's almost nothing, but from Rabbanim there's a, let's say, 300 quotes. He only quotes the Zohar five times, and it's like agav. It's not, you know, intrinsic. It's like, so how do you see that they rejected it? They rejected it. And then they have to say, then the Sfas Emes, and the Sfas Emes, and the Reb Tzadok, and the whole group of later Pshus Chassidus, like, reverted, and, like, forgot what's really happened. No, that's like Birkas Ashir, and that's Birkas Ashir, and the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't refer, the Mishnah is a presumptive text in the Mishnah called the Siddur. And it's mentioned many times by name, but the text of the Siddur is not mentioned. But to come and say that because the first Siddur I have, the entire text of, is from Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon in the year 700, means it was an invention of the Gaonim. I mean, no one's that ridiculous, you understand? Because there's too many references in the Mishnah. But the whole problem is the whole Baal Shem only starts, the whole Baal Shem starts as an approach in Kabbalah. Now, there is a dichotomy in Chassidus, of Chassidus for the elite and Chassidus for the masses. And that's true. There's truth to that. And they're like sort of confused with that, that in my opinion. They're sort of confused with that. But the Chassidus for the elite, part of Chassidus was for the elite. Because if it would have only been for the masses, it wouldn't have gotten anywhere. It would have been forgotten. There would have been one guy, he came, he made a big storm, he made a lot of people happy, which is not even really that true, because Baal Shem wasn't known by that many people anyway. But whatever it is, however you can look at it, it would have gone, it would have disappeared a long, long time ago. But what gave Chassidus life was Chassidus for the elite, because that kept attracting. That's also why it was such a machlekes. And there's no question. The Pshischa consider themselves part of the Sushin Ezmosh, and they didn't have to talk about learning Kabbalah, because obviously, I mean, the whole Baal Shem only starts with Kabbalah. All the Baal Shem's Torahs, I don't want to get into it now, but all the Baal Shem's Torahs only work after you have Kabbalah. Without Kabbalah, it doesn't start. So they didn't have to refer to it, because as the Kutzker said, and this is like the great Chassidus Shalom, not to take out of context, is Misnagdim serve the Shulchan Aruch. Chassidim serve Hashem. Right, you heard that? That's his most famous quote. You heard that one? Yes? Okay. You have to get that one. You have to understand what he means with that one. That's a different share about the Kotzke. He's a very fascinating figure. And I don't believe that he was manic depressive either. But
we heard about him from the Regina Rebbe. Or the to be Regina Rebbe. Do you know? Rebbe Engelhardt.
What?
Rebbe Engelhardt.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, he came and gave a share about like his great great grandfather, and he was Talmud of Katz.
Ah, there you go. Okay. But anyway, but now so Lenenu. Lenenu is I'm very much I'm working with Kahalas up. I'm trying to work out of Rashi. Now we have a problem now because it's like this. The Ramban, in my opinion, is what I call the Rebbe of Limud HaMikra. There's no Ramban here, though.
Yeah.
There's something miyuchas to here. I don't know if they even printed it here. That's how much they considered it. It's a drasha. They did print it. Here they did print it. I meant on Shir Shir. There's something attributed to Ramban and Shir Shir. And Kahala says there is a drasha which was slightly helpful, but no, it's not. It's not so shitati. It's not really shitati. So it helped a little, but not like. He's not doing what he's trying to do other places. They're about doing the Rebbe Limud HaMikra. In other words, it's sort of like in Shas. You know, Rashi is like a very smooth character, and you can fool yourself into thinking that he doesn't understand the sugya or anything like that, or he didn't get this, he didn't get that, he didn't get the next. I mean, Meiri already pointed out over 800 years ago that if you read Rashi carefully, you see he answers most of Tosafot's questions. Which is true. If you read Rashi carefully, you see it's supposed to tell us questions. I mean, not just the Rashi's here, the Rashi's on the Sugya that tells us questions. Sometimes the problem with Rashi is sometimes there's other Rashi's in left field that you don't know about. That's the real problem with Rashi. There's a lot of times the key to all the Rashi's isn't the Rashi. In other words, Tosafos in Shas, let's say, says this is Sugya A and B, and how do you work it out? And Rashi's not. Rashi didn't know what Rashi is. We're going to work it out like this. And you know, I might not even see from the Rashi in those two sugyas what Rashi wants. The Rashi, the key Rashi might be in left field somewhere, which is that's the trick to Rashi. That's why I was this year in Chicago, I was 6'10, I'm not doing history anymore. I tortured myself during 2 years of history. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it a lot. But most people fall asleep when you start speaking about history. I'm doing the Rambam Sefer Teheilim. And I stopped to speak about the Rambam as an elitist, because the Rambam is very much an elitist. Very much an intellectual elitist. I say Rashi is also about the exact opposite way. But not totally opposite. Like, the two extremes like almost meet, that Rashi doesn't mind, you know, Ki'ilu appearing to not understand the Sugya, Ki'ilu just echoing Chazal and not saying anything, but saying something. The key to the Rashi is reading every single Rashi carefully. And when you read it very carefully, and you know, see, the other problems like this, is there's Midrashei Chazal, you know, Rashi sort of, I would say Rashi assumed you knew Midrashei Chazal cold, but in order to really know what Rashi wants, Rashi, you can only understand Rashi if you know Midrashei Chazal cold. That's the only way. Without it, you don't know what Rashi is. The way Rashi is Mechadish almost every single time is not by what he does. It's how his slight, very slight emendations of Midrashei Chazal. That's Rashi's Chiddush. And that's, I mean, I'm talking now in Mikra more than Shas. Shas is a little different, but it's a similar idea, but different. It's a similar idea, but different. I mean, here, I just can't work through. It's just, you know, spewing this one at you. The Chiddush says that there are people who say, so don't think this is a new theory that someone came up with in the last 100 years, 150 years. So there, the Chiddush died over 200 years ago. He heard people say that Rashi really wasn't really Mechadish Perish. He really took it from a better Garish than an earlier existing Pirush. Chiddush says that it's not true. How do I know it's not true? Because I don't remember which Rebbeinu Gershon saw, either on Kutchim or Babas or in Rebbeinu Gershon. I saw Rebbeinu Gershon's parish, not Babas, because everyone has so much Rashi there. I think it must be Kutchim. So I saw Rebbeinu Gershon on Kutchim, and I compared it to Rashi, and I see that Rashi's doing his own thing. Okay, it's not purely his own thing, you understand? That's the whole point of Rashi. It's not purely his own thing. And yes, he probably did get a certain amount of assistance from earlier existing people, but Rashi's godless is that Rashi wrote all of Rashi with everything in mind all at the same time. And the problem is, the keys to the Rashi, sometimes in Shas especially, the Rashi that solves the problem might be somewhere in left field that you're not aware of. And Rashi, in that sense, Rashi is a tremendous intellectual leader. It's not his fault if you don't know Shas Kol. So I explained it already. So there's a Maisa Tali Maisa of the Gun, there's a Maisa of the Gun. It's a Maisa of the Gun that goes like this. God says, everyone knew that the God was well known, the Vilna God. The God was well known to be who he was. In Lithuania, there was a tradition of supporting Talmid Chachamim, and he was publicly supported from a very young age. And he went to say his first year, I don't know if he was in his 20s or his 30s, and all the Lamdanim came from Vilna and from wherever, and they came to hear Rabbeinu Eliyahu say his first year.
Yeah,
I told you the story. He said his year, and they come up to him after the shir, and they listed, let's say, 25 questions on him. I'm talking about every question. So they listed all the questions again, and they said, okay, I'll answer your questions. He said the shir a second time. And they saw, after they listened to the shir, they said, you know what? They listened to the shir carefully, and they saw he, there, let's say, 20 questions, 10 of them he really had answered already. So I do it after the shir after. But what about these questions? Okay, just wait a second. I said the shir a third time. After he said the shir a third time, they saw he didn't really answer it. So Rashi is a similar thing. Rashi is a similar thing. And it's not, we have to, I mean, I've found there's places where Rashi will start ideas. When did I just say this? I'm like, yeah, I got saying a shiur in Birkas Hatorah with Monday nights, and I'm saying a shiur over there. And this isn't even a trick, you know. It's which one is this one? This is there's the Rashi's in I'm not sure if I can say this over right now, but the Rashi's in Tillim, which are basically about a mizmor, about a certain event in David's life. They're like to say that they're working. They're working with the Rashi's in Shmuel in a way which is like, you know, Rashi and Shmuel, where was this? I'm just thinking. That's weird. It's okay. There's Rashi's and Shmuel. Rashi does something which looks like I don't know, like, Kilo plush of shot is one way, and Rashi says, nah, they don't mean what you think they mean. They really mean something totally different. Like, well, what do you do it for? Well, the answer is Rashi and Tehillim, which is really on the same event. And Rashi obviously assumed that you're learning the two together. Because it's obvious that you know which Mizmor Tehillim we're speaking about, which stories in Sefer Shmuel, isn't it? And the Rashi is here. When you put the Rashi's together, you see Rashi has a whole approach in the entire sugya, and it works, you know, as we say, Kavta Meferach. So that's like, that was kind of so difficult. In other words, I'm not talking about finding a Rashi in left field. That Rashi is not really left field. That Rashi is Kilo staring at you. It's just know it's there. Okay, now there's two other issues here. As we go on maybe it's just one of them. We've talked about Rashi a lot. There is a million-dollar question, which I don't think anyone can honestly say an absolute answer to. And that is getting into the history of the Kabbalah, and did Rashi have Kabbalah? That's the, you know, no one can really completely answer that question. Did Rashi have the Kabbalah? If he did, then I mean, people. I don't know. I'm very unsure about it. I don't have any absolutes. There are statements in Rashi, which there's. I wouldn't say it's a direct source, but the only, you know, makbilot, the only similar statements we find anywhere else in Chazal are in Zohar. But there's not so many. There's, let's say, you know, I'd say 5 to 10 of them that I'm aware of right now. That is a hard question to know. Rashi's, you know, the word simplistic is not the right word, but it's, you know, clarity, absolute clarity, makes it very hard to answer that question. But I know a lot of people assume that Rashi did have the Kabbalah. I don't think it's that important of an issue per se. It's definitely possible. In other words, sort of, I'll tell you a different story. Yeah, I know you guys probably never heard of me. You know who Ritz of Salvage, I guess?
Of course, Grizz.
Well, no, not the Grizz. Ritz of Salvage, very, very briefly. Basically, we got married a third time. Okay? So wife A got divorced. I'll tell you the story. Can you come over for Shabbos, right? I'll tell you that story. Right?
No.
Come over for Shabbos, I'll tell you that story. Wife 2 is Ruth Klein's mother.
Can you go over to Shabbos?
If you want to, actually, I don't know when. I can't promise that. I don't know what's happening with my wife, so I can't give you an invitation now, but if you call me Erev Shabbos, then the answer is maybe. I mean, if things are available, then no. But, okay. Wife 2 is Reb Chaim's mother. Wife 2 dies. He remarries an almana with 10 children. He said, Tartara Saguna. It's, you know what Matar Aguna is? So he says, it's Tartara Saguna. Who's a bigger Naguna than a widow with 10 children? She's the biggest Naguna. He had one son from his third wife. And Yitzhak Salvechik is a grandson of that son. He's not a young man. He's in his mid-70s. He's sort of a brisker, sort of not a brisker.
Still alive.
Sure. Maybe he's a great-grandson. He's not more than a great-grandson. Because the base of Levi remarried this woman in the 1880s.
Like,
anyway. Okay, but he's a 75, maybe even 80-year-old man today. So that means he's born in the 30s or maybe early 40s.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
So it's not at all impossible. He's either a grandson or a great-grandson. It's not so important. But he's a tremendous, tremendous lamed. A tremendous, tremendous lamed. He's not exactly great. A friend of mine was there. He doesn't have, as they say, he doesn't have any talmidim. But his tummy, no real tummy, no half stuff or Yitzhak Salvechik. So he told me this guy, Yitzhak Salvechik says, thinks that Rebbeinu Tudash, he sees Kabbalistic things in Dvar Yikra. Okay, I don't know, I don't know how much about I told him I doubt it. Because Rebbeinu Tudash is a Spanish grammarian who was in Spain before the Maseres HaTorah came to Spain. Not that they weren't, you know, reformed, but There were no real Rabbanim in Spain until the four Catholics. That's a fact. Now, the other, you know, point is that like this. This is a famous statement, maybe something else. The statement of the Gaon. The Gaon says that, you know, contrary to common belief, you know, common belief says that Pshat is here. Pshat is like where we are. And Remus is somewhere else. And so it's like basically not somewhere in Meishar, you don't keep any connection at all.
That's where we came.
Yeah, okay, whatever. Now you're really based in Shalom, it's a Shalom, somewhere in French Hill, whatever it is. It's like no connection. Now, I, last year, due to my, you know, working over, I sat on Shabbat's feet most of last year. Very fascinating topic. I personally think that part of why the Gaon said that, because that definitely is a 17. That's definitely a 17 opinion. The shot doesn't work, but so does. You bring the sack on the lotus. And I don't, it's not just, and it's not, okay, whatever, no. Because if the Gaon says it's not true, it's a pasuk in Mishlei, Tabuch Ezov, Maskeles Kosov, Dover, Dover, Olof. Tabuch Ezov, Maskeles Kosov, Tabuch Ezov means a golden apple, which is silver plated, Dover, Dover, Olof, Dover, something is silver property. The Gaon says that's the relationship between Pshat and Sod. So if I have a golden apple with silver plated, you give it to someone who doesn't know anything about that metal, he picks it up, and he thinks that it's just silver because he doesn't see the gold underneath. Okay, silver puts it down. So you get, somebody who knows the metal picks it up. He can feel it's too heavy because gold is heavier. It's almost heavier, but gold is even heavier. And he can see that it's not quite silver. Should have like a depth of a silver color. This is lacking. He looks very carefully. He's able to see this gold underneath. That's what God says. Is the relationship between Pshat and Sod. The Pshat, the Amkus of Pshat, the depth of Pshat leads to Sod. So I don't know, did Rashi have Kabbalah, did he not have Kabbalah, I'm not sure. The Rashi was a real Amkin in terms of Pshat, that I'm 100% sure about. That I have no suffering at all. There's no question that Rashi, in terms of Pshat, was one of the greatest
The Rashbam got there to different things
completely. Okay, so I remember quoting that famous Rashbam. So I say back that, you know, here's how the story goes. Rashbam says, I spoke to my grandfather, Rashi, and after I had a long argument with him, I proved to him that he did not say the most simple shot. And he admitted to me that if he had time to write another, he would write something just a shot. So I say like this. There's not what didn't happen like this. It's not that the Rashbam came to Rashi and said, Zayda, you know, your parish is not really pshat. And Rashbam Chal Rashi said, Shmerla, you're right. It's not pure pshat. And I would really write a pure pshat if I had more time. But I wrote it this way. That's not what happened. Rashbam went to Rashi and said to him, you know, your parish is not pshat. And Rashi argued with him. And the Rashbam proved to Rashi after a long argument that it wasn't pure pshat. And then Rashi said, you're right. If I had time, I would write another parish and show the true pshat.
So Rashi thought that wasn't pshat?
Yes, that was.
Okay, it's complicated. What?
At the beginning, he thought it was.
It's a hard question. The ultimate question of Rashi's conception of pure pshat is hard. Because on one hand, we see from this story in the Rashbam that Rashi admits he's not absolute pshat. The other side of the coin is, as Rashi didn't say, Shmuel, you were right. I wasn't doing. I didn't say that. You argued about it. It's a hard question to answer because, again, the derech of Rashi is just to show his kiddush through his very slight comments, additions, subtractions, etc. That's what Rashi's saying. All his kiddush. That's what Rashi's saying. His kiddush. So that makes it very hard to, in a subtle, final way, decide what Rashi's total approach of pshat is. I'll give you a different example. One of the most basic ideas of pshat is continuity. Okay, that's a very basic pshat idea, and that's important in Gadol's also. Continuity says you're going somewhere. Now, one can think from a cursory reading of Rashi that Rashi's not so interested in continuity. Because Rashi doesn't, it is a fact that Rashi does sometimes address it, But sometimes. I am not going to try to, you know, quantify, you know, offhand with the number, but it's rare. I agree it's rare. Rashi does address it rarely, but not that often. The Ramban addresses it a lot. The Ramban is constantly worrying. Continuity, what's the Sefer, what's going on in the Sefer, Hakdamah to Bereishis, Hakdamah to Shemot. The Ramban's always bothered by it. Constantly throughout Moshe. The Ramban, I'll give you an example. This is a Ramban. It's not in left field, but people would say it's in left field. The Ramban in Sefer Geula. Sefer Geula is about the Geula, the prophecies in Yeshaya and Daniel. The Ramban in Sefer Geula says that Sefer Yeshaya has three parts to it. Up to Perek Mem, Mem to Nunaf, Nunaf to the end. Up till then was pre. Up till then is prima polis sancheriv. Then, in other words, that's Yeshaya A is prima polis sancheriv. Yeshaya B, C are okay, whatever. Let's not get into all the DI. I have my own theories about it. And when I worked on it, I had only seen the Rabbi quickly. I didn't notice that he really divides it into two other parts. So he just divides. I thought he had Yeshaya divided into A and B. Not A, B, and C, and I said, look, it's at least A, B, and C, and maybe even D. Okay, whatever, I'm not going to, I'm just, the point is the Ramban is bothered by continuity all over the place. And you might think Rashi's not. Until you get to Rashi Chirshim, and Rashi Chirshim, and Rashi Tehillim, where Rashi starts explicitly addressing the issues. I mean, three times for Rashi's a lot. Rashi three times says, I'm sure, he says, you know, there are a lot of Midrash Chazal about this, but they're not going with the Pshat, and here's the Pshat in the whole Megillah, blah, 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 blah. And then he goes back another time and explains a little more. The first time he says, it's not going with the Pshat. And the Pshat's like this, but then the second time he adds in more details, which is why I say Shir is very easy with Rashi, at least, because Rashi sets it up as one big flow looking at the entirety of Jewish history. And Rashi and Tehillah, I think it's Samuel Gallup, does something similar. And as I told Yosef about Shmuzing with Rabbi Goldman last night, I said, yeah, Rashi, not going with Chazal, I'm going with Chazal all at the same time. And that's what Rashi's doing. Because the Rashis in Shir Shirim don't sound, if you read the Rashis, in other words, I had one Rashi and I had a basic understanding of Rashi and before I tried to say Shir. So I tried to say Shir on it, and I did whenever I had a problem with Rashi, what do you do? Okay, let's go get the Midrash Rabba. See, if there's a Midrash Rabbah, Rashi is going to bring for the Midrash Rabbah, isn't he? Couldn't find anything. I couldn't find one of 10 statements of Rashi in the Midrash. It's like, what's going on here? Where is he coming from? Like, what's going on? Until, let's say, 40% of Rashi comes from Midrash Tehillim, Midrash Shulchan Tov. Some people insist on mispronouncing it as Shulchan Tov, but whatever, it's Midrash Shulchan Tov, it's Midrash Tehillim. Rashi approximately the Midrash Tehillim, he takes a small amount of the comments of the Shulchan Tov, cuts them up, you know, searches on them, and then spreads them out to the whole Mizmor. And finally, in Samuel Gallup, Rashi says, it says in the Midrash Tehillim that this Mizmor, I think it's Samuel Gallup, that this Mizmor is speaking about Daniel, Goldman, Govar Reis, Daniel, the lion's den. And Rashi says, V'yofa novo, go wash the mizmor, ufiti rea. And we can explain the entirety of that this mizmor with what Chazal said. Yeah, Samuel Gallup. So, it's, that's Rashi. That's Rashi is bothered by continuity. He doesn't get it. Like, just like Rashi expected you to know. And you don't know that the key to this is in Erev and Samach Gimel and Beis? That's the key to this whole sugya. You're not aware of that? Not my fault. So that's okay. That's Rashi and Tehillim. If you're not aware of what I'm doing, tough luck. I'm doing it. Read it carefully. Word it properly. You figure it out. You see, I'm doing something. Okay. So now it's really later. Rashi came from a place he could have had the Kabbalah. Another yes and no. Rashi came from northern France, but some people say Rashi. What does the Yud and Rashi stand for?
It's not.
Some people say it stands for Yerachim.
Is it?
What is Yerachim? What is Yerach?
Thigh.
What?
Thigh.
No, Yerach.
Oh.
Moon. Yerach. Moon. Okay. Why? Who else names himself is related to the moon?
Kabbalist.
The Baal Mor. Yes, the Kabbalist eventually, with the Baal Mor. The Baal Mor is from a place called Lunil. Lunil in French is the moon. And in Rashi, almost certainly, if his father wasn't from southern France, his grandfather was, a very strong relationship with Rav Moshe Adarshan. Rav Moshe Adarshan, I'm not sure if he was a Makabal, he could have been a Makabal. He certainly could have been. And so it's the statement that Rashi may have known the Kabbalah is definitely possible. May have, not. In terms of Kohelis at large, I just want to speak about what I think Kohelis is speaking about. And this is important. If Rashi knew the Kabbalah, then we have the right to assume he has a lot of ideas that he was aware of. And that's, again, the million dollar question of Rashi is, what is he aware of? I saw, it was like in a bookstore, and I was opening up a book to see what people have to say nowadays. And some guys were writing an article about Rashi and Rambam. I think I mentioned this to you, about Rashi and Rambam. Which one understood Christian theology better? So this guy argued that the Rambam understood it better. And I'm not sure. I read the article really quickly. And I'm confident that if Rashi understood it, I mean, there's two issues with Rashi understanding Christian theology. There's two issues. One issue is if Rashi didn't understand it, he's not going to wave his flag around and say, "Hey guys, I know Christian theology." Then Rashi's not going to do that. That's what he's going to do. He's going to refer to it like everything else that he refers to, like one word here, one word here, one word there, add a word in here, add a word there. That's what he's going to do. He does it. It's very fascinating. Unlike the Radak, who consistently argues with the Christian explanations in Tehillim and other places, Rashi, I'm not. See, Rashi's are edited. Rashi's in most Tanakhs, and this Tanakh is edited. Okay, Rashi in Ma'or did a Ma'or edition did a reasonably decent job in getting the Rashi's back. There's some guy from Bar Ilan. I'm not sure if he. I think he only did the Gemara Rishon, so I didn't be back on him. He would do a professional job getting the Rashi's back. Rashi in Tehillim has around 100 edits. Around. Is it possible that there are other Rashi's edited that we don't even have now? It's definitely possible. So I don't know. So you have a problem with Rashi, especially the Rashi, if you're not aware that there's 100 edits in Rashi and Tehillim. And I was once saying Shir on Yecheskel. It was a funny parsha. I said, like, I was saying Shir, I learned it out of the standard Blit edition. And I sang Shir on this, and I said, now Rashi learns this, that this part of it's going on, he calls Machkishe Torah. This is after I'd said on Tehillim, I knew there was edits, and I said, but you know what? It doesn't make any sense. Maybe, conceptually, structurally, it could be he's really talking about Mahmoud's Edo. And it was taken out because of the censor. So I sent some guy, go run, get a Ma'or edition. Brings it back. Yeah, that's what it said. And edited it out. So, Rashi, no problem. Rashi, in terms of Christian theology, there's two issues. One is Rashi's, I'm not sure if we have all the Rashi's. Okay. B, Rashi is going to exercise extreme subtleties in showing what he knows and he doesn't know. That's the second thing. And there's another issue that Rashi, for some reason, doesn't appear to be Gerus the issue, unless we are missing some Rashi's. Unlike, for example, the most famous prophecy in Yeshaya, the virgin birth, Ki'ilu, I mean, not the virgin birth, not the suffering servant, not that one. That's the second. I'm not sure which one's more famous. This is the famous prophecy in Yeshaya, supposedly Christianity, called. No, Shaya, I mean, the first one is the supposed virgin birth. Yes, we're aware of that. Hopefully, okay. I'm at either way. Okay. It's the Vulia Shaya, Perek Vav, Zion, Perek Zion. And then Ibn Ezra over there says, some people claim, it means the Christians, some people claim that Ibn Ezra lived in Spain and in really a Muslim society. But he knew about Christians. So some people claim to speak about their God and not make any sense at all because, whatever, because it's not a messianic prophecy at all. So it's like, there's not much no shaykhs at all. Rashi doesn't appear to address it at all, which is a little funny. It's a little funny. The Radaks I've seen, I have not seen unedited Radak. I find it basically impossible to believe that the Radak would not address the issue. In other words, in Tehillim, there are mizmorot, there are places we know of in Tehillim that Christians say is talking about Yashka, and the Radak addresses. There are places that people today, Christians forgot that already, the Radak addresses those too. So this one, which is olive base of Christian theology, the Radak's not going to address it, the Radak's not going to address it. Rashi, on the other hand, doesn't say anything in any edition I've seen. So I don't know. I'm puzzled. I'm puzzled, and I'm exercising, restraint. I mean, okay, the Rambam, we understand the Rambam's a big thinker, so we understand why this person would think the Rambam structure understood Christianity better than Rashi. I'm very unconvinced, because I sort of assume Rashi is aware of ideas until proven differently, especially if Rashi knew the Kabbalah. Especially, even though I don't have absolute proof to it, but if Rashi understood the Kabbalah, then as the Gaon says, the Kabbalah sort of assumes you're aware of basic philosophical ideas. The Kabbalah assumes that. Okay. A couple of words now about Kahalas. It's actually interesting. So Shul, Rabbi Goldman came by last night. And yeah, you can talk to him about anything. I don't know if you ever read it, but he's one of the biggest. I know a lot of people, and he's one of the biggest geniuses I've met in my life. I think he's a guy you can talk to mom about anything. I don't know if you can talk about baseball, I guess. But
he's no Ivan.
I don't know, Ivan knows baseball?
He's 60s baseball,
exactly. He's not, as far as, I don't think he knows baseball. I'm not sure. I never try. I wouldn't waste my time talking to him about something that's what I was supposed to say. So one of the things we were schmoozing about Kahalas. So I told, my working theory in Kahalas is like this. We have Mishnah and Kahalas. Like two works in Shalom. They're not really doing the same thing. There is a small amount of overlap, but not much at all. Mishnah is what I call life at more the little picture of life. It's not philosophical. It's not questioning. I would say Kelsey is questioning existence, but he's questioning a lot of other things. Existence, not, he's not really questioning that. Mishle is assuming, and is talking about small components in life. How do I deal with my meters? How do I deal with this? How do I deal with that? That's what Mishle is doing. How do I motivate myself? How do I afford to terror? All these type of things. And it works at the Yetzer Hara, but in a different, not the same way. It's not looking at it in broad life decisions. Man's functioning in the world. Mishle is not doing that. Mishnah is looking more at much more in a day-to-day way. Much more. In other words, I'll give you an example. Today, I'll tell you right now, and I grew up in the Deep South, and I saw an article some time ago, not that long ago, an interview with somebody, I don't know if you played for one team here, another one, he started out on the West Coast, and in the West Coast they view sports as entertainment. And he's playing for a New York team. He says, New York takes sports seriously. I go to the Deep South, and they take college football not seriously, religiously. I took someone on a tour of Eastern Europe this summer. This is a woman from the New York area. She's working in UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham. And she was out shopping. Alabama Auburn is a very serious game. Today, I believe they call it the Iron Bowl. When I was growing up, they didn't call it that. It's Alabama Auburn. That's a serious day. In the state of Alabama, that's a serious day. That's the most important day of the year. So this woman was out shopping. She's not from Alabama. She's out shopping. She goes to the store. Cashier store says, "Lady, you're not from here, are you?" Obviously not. Everyone from the state of Alabama was glued to a television for that day. But again, I cannot imagine wasting 4 to 5 hours on the Super Bowl. I don't understand how I grew up in Atlanta, sort of. If the Falcons would make it to the Super Bowl, I would be interested if someone told me the score later. Because, I grew up in a state where college football's religion, And I would, you know, feel good if they win, and feel like slightly bad if they lose. Slightly bad, not more than that. I would waste, I don't know how to waste 4 hours watching this stupid thing. I wouldn't be able to do it. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't be able to do it. And that would be if it would be from 8 to 12 at night, or 7 to 11, or whatever it is in America, to do it from here and stay up the entire night for it, better so. I don't get it at all, okay? And okay, you know what? For the Giant fans last year, I'm teaching Shrug, I know the Giants were in the Super Bowl. I got to understand it.
Giants were in the Super Bowl last year?
Last year, yeah, they were.
What?
Yeah. Did we win? Yeah, you were, that's right, you were in the course already. You missed it.
Giants? Played? There were guys in Israel last year.
There were, but you know, other yeshivas take guys to places, make it fuel them to make sure, because they know the guys are going to go watch the thing.
Yeah. The Giants win the Super Bowl?
I don't know. Is that a pair?
Anyway, the kids are. Why am I telling you that? Because unfortunately, the New York Times started charging for their services online, which I'm not that happy about, because there's nothing, I don't agree with most of their opinion, I don't agree with, but they're just in a different level of comment. They're like, the Washington Post is not bad. For free, the Washington Post is fine. That's what I've got to say about it. So the Washington Post did have the following comment about the Super Bowl. It is, apparently, the way to sell things today is by having scantily-clad women jump across the screen. Because that's what almost every single advertisement the Super Bowl apparently had. That's what they tell me. I don't know. I'm quoting the Washington Post. That issue is not going to be discussed in Gallus at all. No, initially it is. You know, gender attraction and men are. It's a bit. You know. Yeah, I can't resist like blurbing this one to you guys. It's a machlokas Rambam and Ran about this with the records. The Rambam was asked the question: how could if the Rambam has a klal, Kodesh Baruch Hu does not make a gzeira for you to do a mitzvah. So how can it? The famous Gemara says at the beginning of Sota, I think it's pretty sure it's the beginning of Sota, that occurs for Arba B'yom Kodem Leidos Havlad, 40 days before someone's born, what happens?
We get married.
Baskol says, Basponi Laponi, right? Famous Gemara, right? We're all aware of that? So Avadya Hager asked the Rambam, how do you understand that? Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't make you do a mitzvah. Rambam, big philosopher. So Rambam said back, the Gemara is deros chus. Doesn't mean you're going to marry. It means if you're zaka, that's who you marry. If you're zaka, you see if you'll get this person. If not, you won't. It's definitely not. In other words, that Gemara basmati l'pani is deros chus. Rambam understands it happens, let's say, 1 out of 10 times. I'm just throwing out a number for argument, Kilo, just for illustration, not for argument. The Ran, Kedusha Ran, Moed Katan, in the Tezvav, Tezayin area, plus or minus a daf or two, argues on the Ran, on the Rabbah. And he says, he doesn't mention the Rabbah. I mean, that's, you know, that's Rishonim a lot of times. They'll argue with the Rishon, and sort of assume you understand him. Anyway, so the Ran says over there, that if men weren't attracted to women, then the Rambam would have a kasha. So the facts are, men are attracted to women, and you're going to get married anyway. Even whether you like it or not. And
as it doesn't reject the Rambam.
What?
That doesn't reject the Rambam.
No, he means to argue, because he says that's Pshat Gemara. You can't ask a kasha like the Rambam asks. The Rambam asks kasha, the Gemara says, Basponi Lufoni. It means Hashem goes there, you can do a mitzvah. Rambam understands that Kiddushin is a mitzvah. Puruvu / Kiddushin is a mitzvah. So the Rambam says that they can only say that if a person wasn't going to get married on his own ki'ilu, but because of the natural relationship between men and women, you're going to get married. It's extremely likely you're going to get married. Therefore, as a result of that, I'm not holding the sukkah. Don't have you to ask good questions or not now. I'm just trying to illustrate there's a very basic machlokas between the Rambam and the Ran about how to understand gender relations. The Rambam is ki'ilu platonic and it's not only there. There's other Rambams also. There's Rambams in many more than one place which go with this Shita and the Rambam of a hyper-rationalistic approach to gender relationship. I don't know, Mafakas Rishonim can't be Mahriya and things like this, but today, the world today works with the Ran, not with the Rambam. And what happened once upon a time when we weren't bombarded overexposed, etc., to the other gender, that's a different question. What in the real world, Kilo, what would be in the ideal world, in absolute reality? I don't know. In today's world, we have to like more or less assume that we work with the Ram, and I know the Rambam's Chazal, you can't do that. Chazal, you're looking at my Mar Chazal, you can't say because this, this, and this right here. Yeah, another story. One year I was saying on Muafim Aleph, Jar Shraga, which sort of was a mistake, because the first story there is the story of Avishag Shinamis and David. Okay, now, the Pasuk says, Vamelech David lo yadah. David did not have physical relationship with Avishag. And if you're going to try to tell me, I mean, I have a lot of terrorists to explain that. I mean, the further they're terrorists, not to explain it. To explain it, that's what Bruce Gordon loves Earth, not so hard. But what happens after that is like a lot of steps after that, a lot of very interesting ideas. But one of the guys, Sean, Rabbi, that's absolutely impossible! So, if you don't believe the Pesukim, you're not talking about the story of Tanakh, you're talking about something else. We have the Pesukim Tanakh say this. If you believe the Pesukim, then we can go to the next step. And if you don't believe the Pesukim, it's not my fault.
Sounds like Michael Goldman. Is it Michael Goldman?
Say again? It was not Michael Goldman. No, this is years ago. I remember who it was. Whatever. I don't remember exactly who it was. Whatever. Anyway. But this issue is not an issue for Kahelas. Because Kahelas, there's gender relationships that's part of the Lotus of Hashem. Okay. I mean, if you see this, it's a very big thing. And I don't want to get into, I don't know, whatever. But that's a part of the Lotus of Hashem. It definitely is. And in Mishlei, it's spoken about. Absolutely, at least twice, if not three times, maybe more, depends how many times. Blah, 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 blah. But that is a topic for Mishlei. Because Mishlei is about what I call small components of it. It's not about, let's make life decisions. I mean, yes, it's true that in the world we live in today, that may influence a person's life decision. But that's not a real philosophical idea. That should not be a life goal. Kahelas is looking at humanity in the big picture. Life goals, why people do A, B, C. Why is it, I mean, the basic idea of the entire Megillah is man's given Bechira, on one hand, misuses Bechira. Man should use Bechira for the ultimate good. The ultimate good is Torah, and this is how Rashi does it. And I'm just working with Rashi here. Man should use his Bechira for this, he doesn't. Part of the reason why, at least my understanding of it, I'm going to tell you, I have something else to say about this before we go to this for a second. Part of the reason why is because man's part of society, and that is, we don't have a choice. We don't have to like being part of society, guys. We're part of society. We don't have a choice. That's part of man. Part of man. There's a story with Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin was, he traveled back and forth from America to England a number of times. America and Europe. And one of the second or third time, they were having what's called, you know, social gambling. It means small stakes gambling, nothing major. And some guy didn't want to pay his debts. Sore loser. You know, one of Franklin's other observations was, is if two people are equal skill-wise, whoever cares more about the money is going to lose. If someone cares too much about the money, then they can lose to someone who has worse skills than them. His other social observation, though, Franklin's other social observation was, is this guy refused to pay his debts, and they visit the next man that got to pay his debts. Everyone refused to speak to him. He got paid up right away, 2 days maybe. He got paid up. Man cannot live alone. That's a rabbi in Hakama also, but whatever. Anyway. We are part of society at large. How does society affect us? How does society affect decision making, the largest picture? That's what Kahelas is speaking about. That's what Megillah is speaking about. And it's not just I tried everything. It's much more than that. It's getting into society large. I could, based on a lot of now the biggest problem with Kehelis is unlike Shir Shirim, there's only one known set of Chiluki Parshis. It's not that. It's not enough for me to make anything out of it. I spent a very long time trying to divide things up based on Rashi. But now, I'll tell you something interesting I find. Structural argument on how to divide Kehelis is not that common. Here and there, but not that common. Usually the Rishonim structurally, not just this, when I want to link Psukim together, they basically agree with each other. And what they're saying, they can completely disagree with each other. But structurally, when you put them together, they basically agree. I spent a long time, I don't have any copies of this to hand you right now. And this one I need. But I spent a long time working on it, synopsizing the Rashi's. And this is what's called Madhura Kama. If I'm able to finish the whole thing, I'll write it. I really need to rewrite the first part of it based on what I did last year already. Because I found a lot of other things already. I mean, I found a number of small mistakes I made here in subdivision. A number of small mistakes. I make no claims that this is perfect. It's based on Rashi and the Rishonim. And I really want a copy to give to Rabbi Goldman also, because I didn't realize he was so interested in Gehelis. But Gehelis talks about everything. It talks about all the big issues. Not kind of guys.